As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by Patty Barkley, Tony Evans, and from the far reaches of Barnes in West London, Mr. Matt Dickinson. This week our featured games are West Brom v Manchester United, as United remain undefeated, and Liverpool's dramatic comeback to win at home against Bolton. We'll have our usual quick hits feature, and in the debate, we'll be looking forward to 2011 with our panel's hopes for the new year. So please, stick with us for the next 35 minutes or so. This week, we're going to start with Manchester United and West Bromwich Albion. Now, this game, lunchtime Saturday, and you tuned in, and if you watched the first half, Tony, I kind of get the sense that you're sort of wondering who was playing who and did they swap shirts or something, because I thought, you know, West Brom completely overran them in midfield, and it seemed as if United didn't realize that, you know, the new year and the new season had begun.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult for them in the first half. West Brom are a good side. They play good football, and, you know, and they put them under a lot of pressure. I mean, what does Gary Neville have to do to get sent off? I mean, that's a big question. But, you know, the hallmark of title-winning sides and good sides, and I won't say great sides, is that they win when they shouldn't. And, you know, Ferguson, who is clearly a great manager, you know, without a great side, has got the mindset at United perfect. You know, they think they're going to win. They hang on and they win. And, you know, you've got to say fair play to them.
Paddy, you've written a book about Sir Alex, and I've had it incredible. I mean, the guy just turned 69, and he still does little things that surprise you. And it seems, again, it's one of those things that seems obvious with hindsight, but making the change, moving Rooney from up front to the wing to try and stop the fact that they just couldn't get the ball in midfield, is this one of the things that makes him a bit special, a bit different? I can't imagine too many other managers. I mean, again, with hindsight, it's easy. Anybody could does that. But, you know, I'm trying to remember the last time. I'm not picking on him. You know, I saw Steve Bruce or Tony Pulis do something like that.
I think good managers don't stick to their guns. People who don't, I always think this applies to people in a lot of walks of life. People who don't change are weak. The strong people vacillate. And I think that Ferguson's a perfect example of this. Wenger as well. You know, he'll change the shape of, if he's losing late in a game, change the shape of his team completely. Ferguson, I've seen him change the tactics at half-time or even before half-time. I saw him once, many years ago, take off. It was Overmars was giving one of his right backs a terrible going over. So he changed right backs, you know, after about half an hour of a game. It's definitely a mark of him. And it's part of the reason why Manchester United under him have been successful. One of many, of course.
Manchester United are undefeated this season. Statistically, this is, you know, the worst United team in 5 or 6 years. They've, with this West Brom victory, they're on pace now to win 4 away games this season, which would be their lowest total, I think, in more than 20 years. And yet, there they are. And, I mean, Tony, we were talking about this before. Who for United this season has been both consistently present
and very productive? In other words, who's had a great season for United this year?
I don't think anyone's had a great season, but I think they've had there's quite a few of them who've had better than average seasons. Or, you know, it's I don't
such
think,
as
well. I mean, I think Fletcher has had a reasonable season. I think Everett hasn't been at his best, but he's a quality player. I mean, I think the centre halves have been a bit iffy, but you know.
Nanny,
yeah, he's had good games. You know, but, I mean, that's the point. This is not a United side that's bristling with talent, that's going to roll over people. What they're doing, they're doing things efficiently. They're winning games, perhaps, that they shouldn't, and they're taking advantage of a drop in standards at the top of the division. And, you know, and they're going to go on, by the looks of it, and win the league. And it's really the force of Ferguson's personality. He's bred this winning instinct into this team, and he's used the older players, you know, sort of who come through in better sides to help convey this to the younger players. In many ways, it could well be Ferguson's finest achievement to win the league with a side like this.
And obviously, Tony will have been totting up how many championships that will be for Man United this season.
Oh, don't. Well, I mean, I actually considered calling in sick on the 1st of January and coming back in, I don't know, maybe mid-August.
It's funny, I mean, and that is a small, you know, I mean, ultimately, it won't be the difference between the winning and losing it. And you could argue that to Nani, to Anderson, to Obertan, it'll mean absolutely, you know, diddly squat. But actually, To enough of them in that dressing room, and certainly to Ferguson, it's there as another motivating factor. There's no doubt about it. Overtaking Liverpool is another motivating factor.
Word on Wayne Rooney, who finally scores from open play. I think his last goal was in March in the opening minute against Bayern Munich. He has been playing better despite not scoring recently. I guess this is the point where we all play psychologists and read his mind from a distance and answer definitively whether he's turned the corner, Paddy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if he's turned the corner, but I certainly don't think. I think that football is an interesting trend in analysis of football over the last 2 years is it's become much more American, you know, much more statistical. Statistics mean, individual statistics mean absolutely nothing in football. If Dimitar Berbatov scores 2 goals and Chicharito scores 2 goals in every game from now on, Rooney doesn't hit the net till the end of the season, Manchester United win the league, that's not a problem for anybody, least of all Rooney.
One final word on West Brom. I mean, you know, we've praised this legacy of passing and movement, which goes back to Tony Mowbray. I'm struck by another thing. You know, we have this stereotype of English players being a certain way, that even when they're skilled players are sort of head-down wingers. But I look at this, and in Brunt, in Dorans, in Morrison, they don't fit this old lazy stereotype that we on the continent throw around. And I think there's a whole class of players who maybe aren't, you know, sort of top-tier players. But, well, how did this happen? Like, were these guys taught technique at a young age? I thought that didn't happen because nobody played small-sided games and it was always all 11v11. I mean, are these guys freaks?
Oh, I think coaching has become much more homogenous. I mean, African players play more European now, so it's quite natural that British players should play more like French.
And so this
French,
is good.
And French more like British. I mean, the game has become... I think a lot of French people would say that the footballers they're producing are too physical now. And a lot of British people would say what you're now saying. You haven't mentioned little Barry Bannon, you know? I mean, Scotland, which was supposed to be a desert, now has, if you include Charlie Adams, some of the most attractive midfield players in the Premier League. In the middle reaches of the Premier League in England. So, I mean, the game has become more homogenous, and the correct clichés about the failings of the English game are gradually becoming less apparent as we exchange coaching.
I'd love to believe that we, you know, would see a return to skill and talent, but power and pace, I'm afraid, will continue to hold sway as long as they win things.
So, well, Barcelona are the best team in the world, and they're little guys, you know.
I mean, Dicko, could Doran, Brunt, and Morrison, like, could these guys exist on another Premier League team that isn't West Brom? I mean, in the sense that obviously, yeah, they could play for Arsenal, but they probably wouldn't be good enough. But could they exist on another sort of, you know, Premier League bottom 10 team?
I think so. I mean, I think there's enough managers out there who are, you know, trying to be reasonably progressive. I mean, I understand Tony's skepticism, and I still have to say, just wince when I, you know, you hear fans still in England cheering all sorts of the wrong things. I mean, I'm still flabbergasted by this. When you see a centre half charging back and sort of heading the ball back to a keeper in the sprint, and people still clap it. I mean, it's just insane beyond belief. And we must be the only country that does that. And there is, you know, I'm probably in the middle of the two guys on this. I think the culture is changing, but you know, it's not a 5 or even a 10 year thing. It's a 20 and 30 years. We're only part way into that process.
Moving on now to events at Anfield. It looked very bleak. Well, it was sort of a bleak holiday period for Roy Hodgson and for Liverpool supporters. They play Bolton, a good footballing side. Gerrard doesn't start, comes on after 20 minutes. I thought he, just as an aside, I thought the ball he laid on for Torres over the top, and we can say it's a low percentage ball, but you know, he seems to do it more often than others, I thought was just special. And then in the end, a late goal from Joe Cole. I'm going to go to Dicko here. New Year's Day, I pick up my newspapers, and there's all these rumors about Hodgson going and Kenny Dalglish coming in as a caretaker. As far as you know, is this a realistic possibility?
I'm certainly hoping not, for Liverpool's sake. Tony and I disagree on this one, but I mean, you know, Tony Barrett's done some excellent stuff on this, and he wrote with great authority on Saturday morning that, you know, Hodgson is now a question of when rather than if. But equally, he did write that that they realised that Hodgson almost was effectively a sort of caretaker type appointment. It was done with a short term in mind rather than the long term, and that they don't want to sort of lurch from one caretaker to another. So that, you know, they've decided that Hodgson is not the man for the future for them. But they would prefer that they win enough games that they can take until the summer to find his successor. I see as much point in bringing Kenny Dalglish back as Arsenal bringing George Graham back. You know, he was a very successful manager a very long time ago. To appoint him is a complete sort of blindfold throw of the dice. Doesn't make any sense. They should stick with Hodgson, and if at the end of the season they decide to make that change, well, so be it.
Whether it's Dalglish or not, they need to act at Anfield and try and sort things out. I mean, the biggest shock for the Americans will be 9,000 empty seats. The fact is, Roy Hodgson was a bad appointment. It's not working, and the club's in decline. In football, you're either going backwards or forwards. You never stay still, and Liverpool are sliding backwards at the rate of knots. This is a board, this is an ownership that doesn't know exactly what it wants. What's shocked them more than anything is 9,000 empty seats on New Year's Day at Anfield, which is unprecedented. I think they were given signals last week, towards the end of last week, that they would remove Hodgson at the earliest opportunity. I think they've drawn back on that a little bit, and I think it suits them really, because perhaps if they bring someone else in, or even put a caretaker in, the people would be asking whether they're going to spend money in the transfer window. I think it might suit their purposes to let Hodgson limp till the end of January, and there's the perfect excuse not to spend. We're not giving this fella any money, because I don't think there is a lot of money available to be spent.
Everyone knows that Roy Hodgson, including Roy Hodgson, that Roy Hodgson is not, even in the best case scenario, in charge of player recruitment. So how is keeping him till the end of January going to affect recruitment? Damian Comolli is in charge.
But it's not, but it gives you good cover, doesn't it? If you're not going to spend money, the fans want money spent.
I think the Liverpool fans are always telling us the most knowledgeable in the world will know that's not Roy Hodgson's remit anyway.
The thing is, one thing I'd like...
That's what I'm saying.
I guess we shouldn't be shocked if these guys don't have a clue what they're doing. I mean, the fact is, they've bought into a football club they've never dealt with in English soccer before. And I mean, actually, a pal of mine, I won't say from where, but had a meeting with them and was fairly struck by how little they knew just about the business side of English football.
Never mind the nitty gritty
of, you know, of who the best five coaches are out there in working in Europe, England, or anywhere else.
Also,
so I mean, you know, I guess to be blunt, we shouldn't be stunned if they're flailing around, not quite sure what to do. I mean, they're complete ingenues, aren't they?
Well, okay, but first, I mean, Roman Abramovich, as far as I know, came in 2003, had a lame duck manager, finished second, reached the semi-finals of the Champions League, and won the Premier League the year after that. I think if you're a smart businessman and you appoint the right people, you don't necessarily need to have this vast knowledge of or even love of football. I mean, and we can debate whether Damian Comolli is the right guy in this context. But I want to throw something else out, because it's amazing. I mean, my understanding, but it's partly deduction, partly what I've been told, is that the idea is, as you said, I mean, unless Hodgson takes them into the relegation zone, he will stick around the rest of the season, but that afterwards they're going to start moving for a new manager, and you get these unusual names coming out of Liverpool, which almost as if like people are dying for like the next big thing, and one of them, of course, Andre Villas-Boas, who's in his first full season as a manager at Porto, and he used to work for some other manager who I won't name, but yeah. he's undefeated this year. Another one, speculation, Ralf Rangnick, who was at Hoffenheim, he resigned bizarrely over the fact that the club sold Gustavo without his knowledge, and now he gets mentioned. Do we have any sense what Comolli, and I'm assuming the club are going to turn to Comolli for the next appointment,
as I understand,
what the profile is? Is he looking for, you know, a 40-something up-and-comer who's maybe young and enthusiastic and is going to bring something different? Or is he looking for, you know, a proven manager with a proven CV who may demand more money to be spent? Do we have any idea?
Well, as I understand it, they've approached only one substantial figure, Jurgen Klopp, the coach of Borussia Dortmund, who told them not to be so silly. What are they going to say to him? We've got a team that's languishing in the second half of the English league. It's got huge expectations, and for the last home game, 9,000 fans didn't turn up.
I agree with you on one thing. You'd have to be criminally insane to take the Liverpool job. I think there's the lowering of expectations that's gone on over the last year has been amazing. I think Liverpool will be looking for someone who's fairly desperate to take a high-profile job, and I think the remit is to look for someone young and up-and-coming.
Dicko, if you have to be criminally insane, as Tony says, to take the Liverpool job, are we assuming that A, Kenny Dalglish is not interested in the Liverpool job, or B, that he's criminally insane?
I think we're assuming the latter. I mean, he's desperate to have his chance again, isn't he? There's the emotional side of it, like a lot of these guys, you know, managers who sign bad boy players, despite everyone saying don't be criminally insane, they always, there's part of them always thinks I can be the one, and the rewards for being that one are immense. Financially, egotistically, etc., etc. So, you know, there's always someone out there who thinks, you know, if I just imagine if I'm the person who gets Liverpool back on track, I'm a god, and that's a heck of a lure for someone.
I mean, if Kenny Dalglish took over Liverpool tomorrow, results would improve immensely, because there would be that bounce effect of the getting rid of the most unpopular manager probably in history. I've never known such cruelty.
Dicko, we're going to wrap this up by looking at the other manager involved at the weekend.
There was another one.
There was, and he's actually pretty good. His name is Owen Coyle, and I mean, I've waxed lyrical about him before, but I just want to throw this slightly different. If you were Owen Coyle, or if you were Owen Coyle's best mate or his agent, I'm just wondering, looking ahead, I mean, Gartside said, well, you know, we've got money problems and so on. You've got the team up into the top six or seven. How difficult do you think it's going to be to keep this team together, given that you've got people like Cahill and Elmander and Stuart Holden, who are all going to, and C.Y. Lee when he comes back, who are all going to have, you know, some kind of a market. They're going to be coveted by other.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
so you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Clubs, how do you actually go and handle the situation?
Finances off the pitch of, I'm right in thinking they've got they've been propped up, shall we say, for some considerable time, large debts. So the fact is that there will be a temptation to cash in. It's not often that they are competing up in seventh place. As you say, favourable reports for some of their players. The temptation to cash in will be considerable. I mean, if we're talking about sort of making the next step up in management, David Moyes has been trying to make that step up for the last 5 years. Having done some great work at Everton, and no one's given him much of a second glance. So, for someone like Coyle, I'm almost sort of, sounds strange to say, but almost fearful in a funny way, because I do see him sort of hitting the usual glass ceilings, getting frustrated, and it's why partly I'd like to actually see some of the sort of promising British managers go abroad.
Absolutely,
I'd like to see them. I'd like to see them chance their arm. I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to suddenly sort of get red carpet treatment out there, or necessarily even Champions League experience. They're going to have to work to get that. But I'd like to see them try, because a lot of the doors are locked for them at the moment in England.
I don't think it's unreasonable to think that a job at Newcastle or Liverpool or Aston Villa might open up in the not so distant future. I mean, purely cynically, in the very real world.
But you're not throwing money. How many of those clubs are going to throw money at it that's going to put them in top five contention?
No, they may not do that. But as long as those three teams all clearly, I think on paper, have better squads than Bolton, and if he was to get a chance at one of those clubs and at least work with the guys who are already there, then presumably he could do he could overachieve again the way he's done at Bolton. But should Coyle maybe think that? Be a little bit cynical and try to put himself forward for these jobs? I mean, of course, when he left Burnley, he obviously showed an inclination to do that kind of thing before. I mean, I'm just curious in this idea, what should a manager do what's best for himself and for his career? Because, the club's not going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. But, I think the best way to put yourself forward for the big jobs is performances and results. And, in many ways, Bolton's performance at Anfield on on New Year's Day wasn't the best. But, this fella's taken largely Gary Megson's team and he's transformed them. He's got something. And, I don't think anyone who supports a club would feel too bad about him walking in and through the doors at this moment. I think he's got talent. And I'd love to see a young British manager kick on and become a success.
And we're going to look back on 2010 and look forward on 2011 now. And I just want to start with something very simple. Your highlight and your low light of 2010. Mr. Matt Dickinson, your highlight.
My highlight was any night I spent at the Nou Camp in Barcelona. A couple spring to mind. I was watching Messi score four goals against Arsenal. Just fantastic. And actually watching a night when they didn't do so well, when Mourinho knocked them out of the Champions League, but just great drama, breathtaking, Mourinho on the charging across the pitch, sprinkled. I mean, basically, if you go to the Nou Camp and come away underwhelmed, then you're not alive.
Well, unless, of course, you went on Sunday night when they were awful against Levante, but that's a whole other issue. And that was 2011, to be fair. Your low light?
My low light was spending 5 days in Zurich with the FIFA fat cats, hanging around hotels, watching them gorge themselves. I was cynical about FIFA before the World Cup bidding process. I'm not sure I'll ever recover from drowning in cynicism that week. Qatar 2022 will annoy me right until the moment that I'm sent out there, all expenses paid, to stay in a 7-star hotel in Doha and watch the tournament.
I'd argue with that, but Jeff Thompson, I'm sure, no doubt appreciates your thoughts. Paddy, your highlight.
Well, my highlight was, I mean, at the risk of being repetitive, it involved the Camp Nou, and I thought that Barcelona's performance in beating Real Madrid 5-0 was as good a display of football as I've ever seen in my life. It was
ever in your life?
Yes. No doubt. I mean, I can remember all the great performances I've seen. The previous best was Milan 4, Real Madrid. Barcelona 0, the Johan Cruyff dream team put to the sword in Athens in 1993 or 4, I can't remember
1994.
Which, in Athens. And I mean, that was the best club performance I'd ever seen before, but this was much better. This was football perfection for me, because it was all about possession, one touch. I mean, heavens, if somebody took two touches, it was amazing. I mean, it was just incredible. It was football as you dream about. The other highlight would be Germany 4, Argentina 0. To watch Germany emerge at the World Cup, which was an otherwise fairly barren World Cup, as a team capable of dominating not only the next World Cup, but the one after that, was very, very exciting, especially as they played in such style.
See, it's funny, because for me, that's one of the lowlights, and not just because Germany won and Diego Maradona went out of the tournament, but because of all those counterattacking goals and scoring first, and just seemed wrong. But your lowlight?
Lowlight was in another Germany game, Germany against England, when Lampard's goal was disallowed.
Now, kind of jammy, these Germans.
Well, they wouldn't say that. Those who can remember 1966 wouldn't say that. But the fact is, I'm not never particularly bothered as a Scotland supporter when England have a goal disallowed, but that was just outrageous injustice. And of course, it made football look incredibly stupid when everybody all over the world could see that a goal had been scored, except the officials. And the sooner we get video review of decisions such as that, the better.
Tony, your highlight of 2010?
Well, I think it was the World Cup. It was Spain. For me, it was the semi-final, Spain against Germany. I mean, two brilliant sides. The Germans set up, were organised.
That first half was unbelievable.
It was just fantastic. But Spain, patient, prodded, you know, passed the ball around. And it was just a joy to watch. And that, for me, would even outstrips the Barcelona-Real Madrid performance, simply because Real Madrid were all over the place. Mourinho got his tactics wrong. The Germans did everything they could.
It was the unstoppable force against the immovable object.
It was a joy to watch.
You probably don't want to know which BBC pundit texted everybody at halftime and said that this is the most boring game he's ever seen.
There was that mood going on in the office at work, and I was absolutely outraged.
And your low light?
The low light, well, spending so much time talking about Hicks and Gillette and the Glazers and the financial side of football. In fact, it made what should have been a highlight when Hicks and Gillette were finally run out of the club into just the end of a long, painful haul. And, you know, so worn out and so tired of it all, it was hard to even celebrate. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I hate that side of the game, and I hate the way it's become so prominent. And sadly, I fear we'll still be talking about rubbish like that in the next 5 years.
Well, on that low note, let's move out to something more positive. What is our one glowing hope for 2011? Matt Dickinson.
Well, if what is it to be an England fan that, other than to start each year with a ludicrous sense of optimism, only for it to be dashed inevitably somewhere down the line? But so I start with my hope for 2011 to think that Fabio is going to revitalise our team. We're going to see Adam Johnson and Walcott sizzling down the wings. We're going to see Jack Wilshere brought into the midfield. Spraying passes around. We're going to somehow see Gareth Barry packed off, and we're going to see the team not just qualify for Euro 2012, but do so with a little bit of style and panache. It's probably too much to hope for, but hey, football is about hope.
So just as an aside, it's kind of funny how, like, sort of people that are fashionable for a few months. I remember in September, October, everybody talking about Jack Rodwell this and Jack Rodwell that, and he doesn't even get a mention from Dick. I'm sure that's an oversight, because Jack Rodwell is a colossus in the new Duncan Edwards, right?
No, he's Jack Rodwell. I've never bumped up his chances too much. I think he's got quality, but, I mean, every time I speak to people at Everton, they say he's... his first challenge is to get into their team regularly, so I'm going to keep my optimism in somewhere near the real world.
Paddy, your hope for 2011?
Well, if we talk about optimism, all mine could be, as far as players are concerned, could be crammed into the slim frame of Josh McEachran, who I find even more exciting than Jack Wilshere, the Chelsea midfield player. Absolutely marvellous, whole field vision, two-footed. I just can't wait to see more of him. But my main hope is courtesy to referees. It sounds revolutionary, I know. But look at cricket. Look at the way cricket dealt with the Ponting issue. I mean, basically, peer pressure forced him to, first of all, to apologise, then take his punishment, which I thought was a bit light. But it was perceived as something completely out of order and out of step. In football, it would have been considered very, very mild dissent. And that's how far out of step football is with the sporting world. So let's get on with that and sort it out.
I'll throw my two cents in there just because I can. I'm all for that, as long as we reward good referees and punish bad referees and recognize that, yes, they all make mistakes, but some are better than others. Tony, your highlight for 2011?
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, sort of the focus on the game will shift less from money and more onto glory. The game's about glory, and the game's about a rational belief in love. And I'd love to get back to just a simple game where it's all about players and it's all about what happens on the pitch. It'll never happen. So, you know,
Tony, you're going to love my column about financial fair play tomorrow.
I always love your column, Matt. So yes, definitely.
Bring on. It's the year of accountancy. It's the year of financial fair play. It's the year of accountancy.
Well, you know what? Financial fair play, in theory, might be the thing that does bring this quest for glory back. I'll believe it when I see it, but yes, we can all hope.
Well, I haven't expressed a highlight and a lowlight, but I will express a hope for 2011, which is that while we remain as passionate as we always have been, we don't sort of conflate people with their performances. And so if a player plays badly, it's not because he's a bad person or is lazy or is selfish. One of the things which made me most angry was remember that MP who after the after McLaren's last game against Croatia came out and had some kind of thing in Parliament where he questioned the player's heart, their patriotism, their love for their country. Let's just go and judge performance and accept that, you know, and not make personal judgments about people based on their performance. We can make personal judgment if they take bungs or lie or cheat or whatever else, but not based on their performance.
Wise words.
Thank you.
I feel a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Okay, just because we've all been sort of warm and fuzzy and hopeful, let's dampen the mood with some quick hits. Chelsea score what should have been an injury time winner, only for Villa to claw back an injury time equaliser in a dramatic 3-3 draw at Stamford Bridge. Paddy, if Carlo Ancelotti thought he was out of the woods, well, he isn't. But is his glass half full or half empty?
I would say half full, after all. I mean, the man won the double, or his team won the double only a few months ago. They've still got a just about an outside chance in this league, which is a kind of a bit of a slow race. They've got a real chance, I think, still in the Champions League as Lampard regains fitness, which will take a while, as Essien regains fitness, which is taking too long. But, you know, that's still a good squad.
Conclude?
In other words, half full.
Birmingham City lose 3-0 at home to Arsenal, but Alex McLeish is furious at some of the officiating, particularly Robin van Persie's tumble when in close proximity to one Scott Dan. Dicko, we've had this point of diving, but I'm just wondering, like, why does stuff like this happen? And by this I mean, why does van Persie go down untouched, and why does Peter Walton or his assistants, why do they not see it? And did you ever dive when you played football?
I was never good enough even to dive. Van Persie, if I remember rightly, is the guy who once said, quite blatantly, without any apology, said, I exaggerate fouls. You know, I get fouled enough, so when I do get any kind of contact, then I'm going to go for it. In this case, I'm not even sure what he was exaggerating, but, I mean, he's, that's the rule of the jungle, basically. Strikers are going to steal an advantage when they can, and it requires better officiating to stop it.
See, that's what happens when hippie artists are allowed to raise children, like in Robin van Persie's parents' case. Lots of reports linking David Beckham to a move to Tottenham. Harry Redknapp says he's keeping an open mind. Tony, is this just what Spurs need, or is it a purely commercial deal?
Ka-ching! I think they'll benefit more from shared sales than anything else. But I thought it was really interesting where Ivy said, you know, when he said, I've only got Lennon to play wide on the right. He said, because David Bentley keeps picking up mysterious injuries on a Friday morning. And I thought, whoa. So it's, but no, I think it won't hurt them, that's for sure.
I have no idea where he's going to fit into the team. West Ham, bottom at Christmas, are now out of the relegation zone. Paddy, are you starting to believe in the trinity of Karen and the two Davids? Or is it down to amazing Avram?
Oh, well, I mean, this is all about Avram. It would be all about Avram if they were losing every game, and was when that was the case. So obviously he is responsible for the excellent form of West Ham now, and long may it continue. They're playing with spirit, just as Portsmouth did last season.
And it's probably also playing bad teams also helps. Manchester City are level on points with the crosstown rivals, but Dicko, they seem to have a knack for making life very difficult. On Saturday, they squeezed out a 1-0 win over Blackpool when in reality they probably should have scored 10. In light of this, do they look like potential champions to you?
Well, I'm not sure any team looks like potential champions to me in this season. That's the weird thing about it. But, I mean, you know, are they championship contenders in this season? Yes, they undoubtedly are. They're up there. Obviously, United have got a couple of games in hand, but they're in there fighting. They've got a chance. If they sign, I mean, Dzeko's a completely unknown quantity for them. Will he fit in straight away? But, yes, contenders, yes. Likely champions, no.
Sepp Blatter is setting up a blue ribbon anti-corruption committee at FIFA, and Matt Dickinson tweeted yesterday that it was too little, too late. Tony, do you agree with Dicko?
Sepp Blatter, anti-corruption. I'm going to kill myself.
Anyway, Gab, one for you. Jose Mourinho has revealed that Gonzalo Higuain will be out for 6 months, up to 6 months. Real Madrid going to be hitting the January sales?
I expect they pretty much need to, because they only have one center forward in Karim Benzema, and he's not exactly Mourinho's cup of tea. They have another kid, Alvaro Morata, but he's just 18 years old, and I think he's played one more game for Real Madrid than I have this season. The backdrop to this is that this is a power play also from Mourinho towards the club. He was very critical because the club initially said that Higuain wouldn't need any kind of surgery. And now, of course, he does. So Mourinho seems vindicated. I think what he's going to do is he's going to look for a short-term solution, possibly maybe Emmanuel Adebayor on loan, somebody fitting that profile, or possibly bring a youngster like Romelu Lukaku over early. But that's a big gamble because he's still 17 years old. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Game Podcast. In the meantime, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all your news, your gossip, your analysis. Also, you can enjoy our web chats. I do mine on Mondays, Paddy's is on Tuesdays, and Ollie K's is on Wednesday. And of course, don't forget, you can follow us all on Twitter. I'm on there at Marcotti, Paddy's on there at P. Barkley Times, and Dicko's on there at Dickinson Times. And of course, so is Ollie K, who's on some well-earned rest right now. But if you really want to look him up, you can find him at Oliver K. Times. We'll be back next Monday taking a look at all the action from the third round of the FA Cup. Thanks so much for your time. We'll catch you next week. Till then, toodle-y.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.